Nordic countries have free or heavily subsidised childcare. That is, it doesn't cost families in Nordic countries much to send their kids to childcare centres, which allows for women to continue to work. We've estimated that that's actually worth around about $60 billion a year in additional GDP if Australia had a similar kind of looking female participation rates as Nordic countries.
G'day and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Institute, and at the time of recording this, on Tuesday the 9th of June 2020, The Guardian is reporting that Australia has 455 active cases of COVID-19, 6,709 recovered cases, and a sad 102 deaths. The one thing that this pandemic has done is forced governments to shut down whole parts of the economy in order to try and contain the public health crisis. And so far, the data shows that women have seen faster job losses than men as part of this recession. And many people are describing this as a pink collar recession. And despite the fact that women have borne a disproportionate share of the recent increase in unemployment, so far the stimulus measures announced by the government have tended to disadvantage casual workers, where women are already overrepresented, and they've been focused on specific industries like construction, where women are underrepresented. So overall, women are really losing out from this COVID-19 recession, while men are gaining the most from the targeted stimulus packages. Basically, it's heads men win, tails women lose. And to rub salt in the wound, this week the government announced it was ending its free childcare policy at the same time as childcare workers will be stripped of access to JobKeeper in mid-July. That's two whole months before the Prime Minister said the JobKeeper package would end in September. Frankly, it's a bit of a disaster for Australian women.
Showering the blood sounds pumping out on the streets. The traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5.
Female-dominated industries have been hit much harder by this crisis, wiping out women's jobs twice as fast as men.
Parents could soon be forced to pay for childcare again, with the government hinting its fee-free scheme could be about to end.
Dan Tehan says it's not sustainable and was only ever meant to be a temporary measure.
So the sector can start to bring more children in.
What we'll see is a snapback in terms of a shutdown of some childcare centres.
Some economists say it'll be a double whammy for women and will entrench the disadvantage they face in the workforce.
Pulling the plug on the childcare support now, before government has actually committed to creating jobs and stimulating demand that creates jobs for women, is really, it's cruel.
A third of parents have reported they won't be able to afford the same care.
And that these essential workers are going to be pushed off JobKeeper earlier than everyone else.
So to help unpack how women are being disproportionately affected by this recession, I'm talking to senior economist at the Australia Institute, Matt Grudnoff, who's been crunching the numbers. G'day, Matt.
G'day, Herb. How are you?
Not too bad, but there's a lot of bad news around today for Australian women. So the government has announced it's ending free childcare from mid-July, and at the same time it's going to strip childcare workers of access to JobKeeper. If you were designing a policy to disadvantage women, could you come up with a much better policy prescription than that?
No, I don't think you could. It really is a double whammy. We know that women primarily look after kids in the home, so the free childcare was certainly helping women and allowing them to participate in the economy. And at the same time, women make up most of the workforce of childcare centres and childcare, and so they're being stripped the only area that currently gets JobKeeper that is being stripped is from childcare, which seems incredible.
When the government first announced its free childcare policy, which I think was back at the beginning of April, it was in the context of the industry being, in a lot of peril, and many centres perhaps being on the edge of shutting down altogether. But at the same time, the Prime Minister and the Education Minister essentially acknowledged that childcare was essential, particularly for essential workers, but it was a policy that was going to enable all workers to keep going to work and keep being able to put food on the table. What impact does affordable and accessible childcare have for women in the workforce generally?
Well, look, it has a big impact on their participation rates. If we look at countries that do a lot for childcare and also for other areas of participation for women's work, for example, Nordic countries, we see that in Australia, if you look at the participation rate by age, that is, if we look at participation rate for women in their 20s, in their early 30s, their late 30s and so on up, we see in Australia there's actually a drop in the participation rate. That is, it climbs quite quickly in their 20s and then it actually falls in their early 30s, which is when most women have children. It then increases again later on, particularly in their 40s and 50s. But if we look at Nordic countries, we don't see any dip in their 30s. That is, women in Nordic countries continue in the workforce. And a big part of that is the fact that Nordic countries have free or heavily subsidised childcare. That is, it doesn't cost families in Nordic countries much to send their kids to childcare centres, which allows for women to continue to work. We've estimated that that's actually worth around about $60 billion a year in additional GDP if Australia had a similar kind of looking female participation rates as Nordic countries.
So the fact that a lot of Australian women can't afford or can't access affordable childcare means that they're out of the workforce and they're not contributing to GDP. So it's not good for the Australian economy.
That's right. And the government acknowledged that when they announced their free childcare policy. They said that this would be good for participation rates in Australia for women entering the workforce.
Another massive government announcement, this time it's childcare. It will now be free for all as part of
free childcare. We want as many people being able to work as we possibly can.
And women are some of the most affected by that, with school closures. And even if they're trying to work from home, while at the same time looking after kids, it's not an easy job, whether your mum or dad doesn't matter either. It does impact on the productivity. So kids going back to school lifts productivity, helps people get back to work and helps the economy get back on its feet.
We also know that when the government was trying to convince state premiers to reopen schools, they also had the same argument. They said that schools should be open because that would allow people to send their kids, particularly women, to send their kids to school, and it would improve their participation and their productivity. And in fact, that the government or Treasury kindly gave us some numbers, and they said that allowing people to send their kids to school was worth over 300,000 jobs and $34 billion for just 3 months. Now, exactly the same arguments apply to childcare, as the government, when it announced its free childcare, pointed out. Free childcare is actually very, very good for an economy, and Australia's GDP would be significantly higher if we had good childcare that was incredibly affordable or free. More women would work and the economy would be a lot larger.
Lest we get accused of forgetting men in this, obviously men are parents too. Men also have children, but we don't tend to see that same impact on the male participation rate in the labour market after men have children as we do for women, do we?
That's right. We don't see that dip in the early 30s amongst men's participation rate. And from that, we can deduce that men, while some men definitely take on caring responsibilities, it's nowhere near as large as the proportion of women who do that. We actually do see a definite dip in female participation rates when they have children, and that just simply doesn't happen to the same extent with men.
And so in the long term, being out of the labour market while you're caring for children, what kind of impacts does that have for women over the long term?
Well, that was also very, very interesting. If we compare Australia to Nordic countries, while participation rates rise for women in their late 30s and into their 40s and into their 50s, the participation rate never gets as high as it does in Nordic countries. That is, not only do Nordic countries not see that dip in their early 30s, their participation rates continue to climb slowly. And in women in their 50s in Nordic countries, more of them are participating in the workforce than women in their 50s in Australia. That is, that attachment to the workforce remains. It also remains for full-time versus part-time work. So we see not only do participation rates fall, but the proportion of women going part-time also increases dramatically in Australia, whereas it doesn't in Nordic countries. So there are more women working full-time in their 50s as a proportion of the total labour force in Nordic countries than in Australia. And so what this means is that the overall earning capacity, or the amount of money that women earn over their lifetime, is much higher in Nordic countries.
And presumably that, they might have a different system to us of superannuation, but I'm also thinking of, by the time women retire, if they haven't maintained that connection and have spent time out of the workforce caring for children, they're going to have less money in superannuation, and there's going to be an income gap that they've had throughout their career that persists even in retirement.
Yeah, look, definitely. So superannuation balances are heavily affected by people taking time out. That is, periods of time where they're not in the workforce, or periods of time when they work far less hours. So they work a part-time or a casual. If more women, are working full-time, and if they're not taking gaps in their career, that is, they're not taking time out to look after children, then they will certainly put more money in their super accounts. And this money will be put in at an earlier age, in their early 30s, and will, they say one of the most powerful forces in the universe is compound interest. Well, basically, if you put money in your super earlier on, then it will grow the balance in the long run. So women, if we had affordable, cheap childcare of good quality, then it's likely that women's super balances will increase and they'll be less reliant on the government when they retire.
So we're talking there a little bit about casual and part-time workers. And obviously in this recession, one of the first things that happened was a lot of employers sacked or stood down those in precarious or insecure work. And we've seen a lot more casuals let go than we have full-time workers, thanks to JobKeeper. And packages like JobKeeper were designed really much more with full-time workers in mind, and there were almost a million casuals who missed out on that. But also we've seen that women are more likely to be in part-time, casual and more insecure work, but also that a lot of female-dominated industries were some of the first and most hardest hit by this recession. So is that where this idea of a pink-collar recession comes from?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So what we've got from the ABS is we know that a larger proportion of women have lost their job. But not only that, a larger proportion of women have lost hours. So even those women who still have a job, a larger proportion of those than men have lost hours. And we also know that for those women who've actually lost their job, a larger proportion of them have simply given up looking for work. That is, they're not seeking out employment. And the reason for this is twofold. The first is that a lot of industries that are predominantly female have been hardest hit. So I'm thinking about accommodation, cafes, restaurants, retail have been hardest hit by this recession. And those industries tend to be dominated by women. The other thing is even amongst industries that are male-dominated, women have been more likely to lose their job. That is, you have industries that employ more men than women, but women are still losing their job more than men. And that's likely because women are more likely to be part-time and casual in those industries, and they're the easiest workers for people to lay off or bosses to lay off.
So, Matt, this idea of a pink-collar recession and women, I guess, bearing a disproportionate burden of this recession, ideally, the government, when it's targeting its spending, should be targeting it at the people who need it the most and the industries who need it the most. And we are already seeing this disproportionate impact on women. So how does a package like Home Builder that's targeted at the construction industry help women.
Yeah, this is the real odd thing about the way in which the federal government, but also state governments, have approached stimulus in this country. So what we've seen is, for example, the Home Builder Package, which is $688 million, and it's designed to encourage people to buy new homes and do renovations. So it's basically stimulating builders of residential property. We know that residential property, or construction more generally, actually doesn't employ a great deal of people. And the way to think of it is like this. If you added an extra $1 million to a particular industry, the government decided to stimulate a particular industry and it added an extra $1 million, how many extra jobs would be created? And we know in construction that if you added another $1 million, for each additional $1 million you added to the construction industry, you'd get one additional male job and you'd get 0.2 additional female jobs. So 1.2 jobs extra, one job for men and 0.2 jobs for women. But if we take education, of which childcare is a part, if you added an extra $1 million, if you stimulated that particular industry by $1 million, for every $1 million, you would get 10.6 female jobs and 4.3 male jobs. So not only do we have a situation where 53 times more jobs for women are being created, but even for men, you've got 4.3 jobs per $1 million in education for men versus only one job per $1 million in construction. So any way you look at it, education is a far more what economists call labour-intensive industry. That is, it creates far more jobs the more money you put into it, the more you stimulate it. So really, the government's obsession, and it's not just the federal government, we saw the New South Wales state government try to justify a wages freeze by saying that they would take that money and put it in as stimulus into construction. So there's a real fascination with building things, with concrete and steel, but that's not actually the best industry necessarily to put money into. You're better off putting money into things like health, education, and retail and these other sort of industries that employ far more people.
So, Matt, economically speaking, is it a good idea to be getting rid of free childcare and ending JobKeeper for childcare workers?
Taking away free childcare will actually contract the economy. When the government announced free childcare, what it basically did was is it took household budget, it impacted household budgets. And what it did was is it meant that households weren't paying fees to childcare providers. That money was being paid by the government. This freed up cash for these households to spend in other areas, and they were going to buy other things, which would then create jobs in the economy. But now that the government's announced that it's getting rid of this free childcare, what it's going to do is then load up these households with childcare fees. So they're going to have less money to spend elsewhere. And this will have a contractionary effect. And this is definitely not what we want to be doing right now in the economy. We don't want to be reducing the number of jobs. We don't want to be contracting the economy. We want to continue to expand the economy.
So essentially it's the opposite of what we should be doing.
That's exactly right. It's contractionary as opposed to expansionary. And right now we want to be stimulating the economy and expanding it. We do that by taking pressure off household budgets and allowing them to spend elsewhere. And that's exactly what free childcare did.
So, Matt, how does this approach compare, or how does this recession compare for women, say, to the GFC?
Well, the GFC had an impact on women and men as well. In the lead up to the GFC, we had about 4 or 5 years where we got a tax cut every year during the mining boom. And those tax cuts were enormous and they were mainly aimed at high income earners. And only about 32% of those tax cuts went to women, with the rest of it going to men. But after the crisis, when the government was trying to rebalance its budget, its proposed budget cuts mainly impacted women. So about 55% of its proposed budget cuts were about cutting the budgets of women. So cycles like this, during the boom, we tend to cut the taxes of men, and during recessions or downturns, we tend to cut spending on women. So it actually impacts women negatively in net terms.
Well, that's super depressing. We might wrap it up there. Matt, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
This has been a special episode of Follow the Money, and we're aiming to bring you shorter but more frequent episodes during the pandemic, so please stay tuned and make sure that you're subscribed on your favourite podcast app. And if you can, please leave a review. It helps other people to find the podcast. You can check out the Australia Institute's Economics of a Pandemic webinar series at our website. And the next event is on Friday, the 12th of June at 11 a.m. with the independent member for INDI, Helen Haynes, and former Supreme Court judges David Harper and Margaret White, who will be talking about safeguarding Australia's democracy. You can register for that at our website at tai.org.au/webinars. For the latest health information, you can check health.gov.au or listen to the ABC's excellent CoronaCast podcast, which comes out daily. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 9th of June 2020, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit tai.org.au for all our latest research and content, including our analysis of the gender impact of the recession. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS, and my Twitter handle is ebony_Bennett with a double N double T, and Matt is available at Matt Grudnoff, GRUDNOFF. This episode was produced by Jennifer Macy and the cover of 9 to 5 performed by Lizzie Jack. And remember, please stay 1.5 metres away, keep washing those hands, and thanks for listening.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by, it's all taken and a given, they just use your mind. And they never give you credit. It's enough to drive you crazy if you let it. 9 to 5 for service and devotion. You would think that I would deserve a fair promotion. I want to move ahead, but the boss won't seem to let me. I swear sometimes that man is out to get me.